with that diagnosis, I then was advised to look at my diet more. And that was when I first saw that the real power of nutrition.
Hello, and welcome to the Medical Women Podcast, the world's first podcast aimed at supporting and empowering medical women in their careers. I'm Dr. Nuthana Bayankaram, and it's my honour and joy to be your host as each week we speak to a fantastic guest who's here to help us in our careers. I'm Vice President of the Medical Women's Federation, the largest body of women doctors in the UK, and the voice of medical women on medical issues. Join us as each week we hear about a topic that's helpful for all of us in our careers. Hello everyone, a very warm welcome to the Medical Women Podcast. And I'm really excited. This is our 61st episode, but our first episode where we've got a podcast sponsor. So I recorded a series of episodes on women's health because I think it's really important for us to speak about women's health on a Medical Women podcast. Most of our listeners are women and range from medical students all the way up to retired doctors. So I think it's really important that we speak about the whole life course of women's health. And so I've curated the series with this first episode with our guest, Jess Casriel, who is a nutritionist who specializes in supporting women to optimize their fertility. And in this episode, Jess speaks about how we can look after ourselves during our menstrual cycles in terms of our nutrition and exercise, and actually how that changes, because the whole system that we work in, it's not really designed for people who have cycles. It's, you know, our energy fluctuates at different points in our cycle. And it's really important that we think about that. And I also think it's really important that we speak about fertility, because the data suggests that for women who are doctors, we tend to have children a bit later. And like some recent studies have shown that rates of miscarriage and infertility issues can be higher in medical women. And it's not always clear why. It could be because we've got very stressful jobs, or because we are thinking about having families a little bit later than women in other professions, perhaps. But that is a really important aspect. We need to look after our workforce and we need to look after ourselves. And so that's why I thought it was really important that we have this conversation that we might not always have. You know, on this podcast, I really like having the conversations that are really important that people don't always have. And I think these things are important. So I'm really glad that Jess came on to speak about this. And you'll hear a short discussion now between me and Dr. Mary-Anne Favreau, who is the Medical Director of Health Innovation, Kent, Surrey and Sussex, who are the sponsors of these four episodes. So it's great to start off this mini-series on women's health. And I'm joined today by Dr. Mary-Anne Favreau, who is the Medical Director for the Health Innovation Network, who are very kindly sponsoring these episodes. So welcome, Mary-Anne.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And fantastic to be partnering with you on this project.
Well, thank you. And it's lovely to have you back on the podcast. Regular listeners will know that Mary-Anne has been on the podcast previously. And in that episode, we actually spoke a little bit about fertility and how that's a really important topic that people don't speak about. So it's great that you're back here, Mary-Anne, because that conversation kind of inspired this conversation to take place. So in this episode, Jess Casriel speaks about how we can support ourselves during our menstrual cycles in terms of nutrition and exercise, but also things that we can do to try and optimize our fertility. And I wonder, from your perspective, Mary-Anne, why do you think it's important that we speak about this?
So I think it's really important that we have this conversation. So it's something that the Health Innovation Kent Surrey and Sussex, us as an organisation, feel really passionate about. We have a strategy about women's health. And one of the key elements within it is how we can support women at work. And I think that when we talk about fertility, it's really important for us to raise awareness and understanding of what women may be going through whilst they are on that journey. And also how us as employers can really support people through that process. So I think it's a great conversation for us to be having. I hope people learn about, you know, something new from today and take that forward and, you know, really ask your colleagues how they are and think about how we can be kind and compassionate in the way that we support people at work.
So it's lovely to have with me today, Jess Casriel. Jess, welcome to the podcast. It would be great if you could introduce yourself to our listeners.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to be here. So just to tell you what I do. So I'm a women's fertility health coach. So I'm a nutritional therapist. And actually, I grew up as an international tennis player. And I played for Great Britain and travelled sort of the world. Sort of one of my highlights was playing for Junior Wimbledon. So it was more of at a junior level. But my interest naturally in nutrition started with playing tennis and also being diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome when I was 14. So actually with that diagnosis, it was quite a relief at the time because I was gaining weight without really knowing, and I was training many hours and really eating quite similar to my peers. So it was, you know, a bit baffling to me. And so, you know, I also had other symptoms like the excess hair and, you know, sort of skin tags and things like that. So with that diagnosis, I then was advised to look at my diet more. And that was when I first saw like the real power of nutrition in terms of I was then sort of managing my weight and also noticing the effects of my tennis performance as well. And, you know, unfortunately, further down the line, it sort of turned too focused on my diet. And I did suffer with an eating disorder for, you know, several years, sort of as it progressively got worse. But when I decided, you know, when I was 18, that I didn't want to continue it as a career, but I went to America for university where they offer sort of full-time scholarships for tennis and academia. So I studied psychology and pre-medical sciences, really in the view to go down the medical route. I was thinking medical school after university. And after university, I returned home to do the postgrad medical exams. And I sat, I think is it the GAMSAT and the other one as well. With the GAMSAT, I was one mark off basically passing. And even though I was devastated at the time, I really think, you know, things are meant to be. And I realised actually I have this passion in nutrition. And that time I was in recovery from my eating disorder. And so I found this master's at UCL that was in nutrition and eating disorders. So that really was sort of where my career started, if you like. And I then, you know, from that point really had that passion to help people with eating disorders and specifically through nutrition. And then really in terms of being more interested in reproductive health and menstrual cycles and the power of being in sync with them was really when it was probably about 6 years ago when I started to read up a bit more on actually what the benefits can be with syncing with your menstrual cycle with and using nutrition and, you know, sort of adapting your exercise over the phases. And I noticed myself just with the symptoms of having less PMS symptoms, I used to have debilitating period pain actually to a point where I really was sort of bedbound or, you know, had really bad nausea and sometimes was sick. And actually just, you know, kind of being more in sync I now am pain. I really don't have pain during my menstrual cycle, which I feel is a miracle. Like I didn't, I actually used to believe that that wasn't possible. So actually seeing, you know, that you can have some effect on it, you know, not all the time, but you can, you know, really have, or nutrition can have an indirect influence on it. And yeah, and then really, so that's with my own experience. And then I started to practice it more with clients and seeing that they were getting results. And then, you know, when we decided my partner and I wanted a baby, we, you know, actually, we were very grateful that we got pregnant relatively quickly within 4 months. And, you know, actually having my baby, which was 14 months ago now, it brought so much joy that it's just ignited this passion in me to kind of go down the fertility route and to be really supporting women, you know, who are struggling with their fertility issues, and, you know, men and women, obviously. And yeah, so that's really where it's taken me today.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. I think you're definitely the first professional tennis player that's been on the podcast. But also thank you for sharing about, you know, about having an eating disorder previously. And I think that's beautiful that you took your experience and then you've used that to help others. I think that's a really lovely thing that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
So I wanted to invite you onto the podcast because we're doing episodes about women's health at kind of different stages of their life cycle. Our listeners range from medical students all the way up to retired doctors. So a lot of our listeners will be at the stage where they're still having menstrual cycles. So it would be great if we could start off speaking a bit about that and things that we can do to kind of, like from a nutrition point of view or exercise point of view, to help during our cycles.
Yeah, absolutely. So really during the first phase, the menstrual phase, so in Chinese medicine, it's really seen as sort of the winter phase of our cycle. So this is where, you know, actually we need the warming hot foods, such as like soups, and you know, bone broth is an amazing one here for the nutritional density it has as well. But yes, stews and things like that are kind of more comforting and nourishing. And especially when we're needing the iron and magnesium and B vitamins as well. So in terms of food, if you eat meat, even having a steak, you know, during your menstrual cycle, lots of really good vegetables, actually they say, you know, focusing really more on the protein and fats and the monounsaturated fats, so those, you know, sort of avocados, olive oil, and, you know, sort of the, we say, the healthier fats, although, you know, it's really about getting the balance right. And, you know, also your complex carbohydrates, but really focusing on the protein and fats, making sure you're having that, those nourishing warmer meals, and things like berries and the lower glycemic fruits as well during this stage is supportive. And in terms of sort of in exercise, really it's recommended just to rest. And especially, you know, if you're someone like me that finds rest really difficult, you know, I normally advise, like, the first, if you can, the first 2 days of really giving yourself permission to, you know, completely rest. You can go for a walk or do something gentler, or maybe some active rest like yin yoga or restorative yoga, where you're allowing yourself the one time in the month where you're fully saying, I'm going inwards and reflecting, you know, a little bit of where you're at, and sort of just that self-reflection time. And then really it's unique, it's individual to if you feel more energized day three, day four, and you want to start doing some more activity, then that's up to you. But if you feel actually you're someone who has maybe heavier periods and you do find, you know, it's a little bit more draining, then to, you know, allow that 5 to 7 days where you're restoring and replenishing, really. So that's really, so obviously the menstrual cycle is where your hormones are the lowest as well. So this is where, yeah, you're kind of keeping up, I like to say, you know, keeping up at home, you know, probably where your immune system as well is the lowest point. And so then in the next phase, the follicular phase, is where, so this is more your springtime, where you start to feel a little bit more energized. And in terms of nutrition, this is where adding in sort of more anti-inflammatory foods, such as like your oily fish, and so your omega-3s, so like chia seeds and flax seeds, and things like this. It's also, there's evidence to suggest the supporting your microbiome here. So, you know, really your gut friendly foods, such as, you know, some adding in a bit of kefir or sauerkraut, you know, maybe kimchi, things like that, that can help support really the estrogen metabolism. So the idea here is this, if you can support this phase with anti-inflammatory foods and gut friendly foods, even maybe if you take supplements, adding in a probiotic, it helps to support you from the later stages of the cycle, where your hormones are going to change, and you might, you know, if you have slightly imbalanced hormones and things, that's really supportive to be adding in those foods in this point of the cycle when you're feeling your best, really. So other anti-inflammatory foods could be some herbs like ginger, turmeric, and, you know, some complex carbohydrates, rye bread, you know, so really light, fresh foods like citrus foods and things. And this, in terms of exercise, it might be where you are starting to feel more energetic, and you wanting to, you know, whether it's running that's your thing or weights. And this is where they say you can go maybe a little bit stronger. So, you know, if you are going for a PB, this is a great time to do it. Or, you know, if you want to do your interval sprints, things like that. So this is where obviously the estrogen and the FSH are rising. And then moving to the ovulation stage, where this is where sort of where the estrogen is the highest, and we can feel our most communicative and social, and in Chinese medicine, those sort of the hottest part of our cycle. So choosing, you know, cool raw foods. So maybe you feel more like smoothies for breakfast and salads. You know, and I always say, again, individualize this. It doesn't always mean you have to follow this. It's just sort of also working with yourself intuitively. But this is, you know, where also increasing your fiber intake to help decrease the bloating, and you're supporting yourself towards the luteal phase as well, where you might get increased cravings and things. And in terms of exercise, again, this is maybe where you're maybe even trying a new exercise class, as you're feeling a bit more social and things like that as well. So still kind of supporting, this is where you can also increase your muscle mass. So yeah, sort of you can go a bit harder during those phases. And then as we move into the luteal phase, so I kind of split luteal phase into two phases. So the first, you know, 1 to 5, 6 days is really, you know, you can still be doing maybe a bit more harder workouts, but you're mindful that you're in the luteal and you're starting to wind down. And obviously this is where the estrogen is dropping down, the progesterone's increasing. And so really looking at increasing the antioxidants in your diet here. So ensuring you're having that range of vegetables, the sort of rainbow, the rainbow colors, and to ensure you're getting those different antioxidants in your diet, as well as we really focus on here magnesium as well. So those dark green leafy vegetables, some dark chocolate, you know, if you like dark chocolate, obviously if you get those cravings and you're wanting something sweet, that has the magnesium and a bit of antioxidants in too. And then also we're thinking about, because of the, you know, sort of increasing PMS symptoms potentially and cravings and things, is focusing on your complex carbohydrates and maybe even having sort of roasted vegetables or the sweet potatoes, and really adding those root vegetables in a little bit more and being mindful of that to sort of combat it as well. And you know, quite often I hear women that I work with say, you know, have this big fear of carbohydrates, and actually you know, it's really important to try and demystify that myth, because, you know, carbohydrates and particularly complex carbohydrates, which are high in fiber and have the B vitamins and things, are just so supportive for our bodies, and we need them, and, you know, our brain needs them. So, you know, that's really, really important in this phase. Also, what some women struggle with is fluid retention in the luteal phase, particularly. So actually foods adding in a bit of like watercress, mustard greens are particularly good here. And I, you know, I always say, because I work with clients who have disordered eating or eating disorders, is that it's not being perfectionist around it. It's not being like, okay, I need to have these 10 foods at this time. It's really just saying, okay, which two or three foods can I add during this phase that's going to support me more? So if it's someone who's like, yeah, the fluid retention is really a big thing for me, and the bloating, it's then, okay, adding some more fiber and maybe adding these couple of greens into your smoothie or your soups. And another big one in this is protein, but particularly making sure there's protein at your breakfast. If we sort of miss out on that and have sort of a high sugar breakfast, or you know, don't have the protein, is that it's much harder to get off that blood sugar roller coaster. So, you know, ensuring it's protein dense, and this could be, obviously, it could be your eggs at breakfast, or ensuring you're adding like a plant-based protein in your smoothie, you know, ensuring your balanced plates. So yeah, so I think those are sort of the main components of this. And in terms of exercise, actually, I didn't mention about luteal, is particularly during the last, let's say, you know, 5 days leading up to your menstrual cycle, is, you know, if you can start to do more yoga or Pilates or something that's a little bit less high impact exercise. And if it's someone, if you are kind of an athlete, or, you know, someone who really loves their working out, it's then seeing, okay, how can you just bring it back a bit and tailor your exercise to, you know, so that you're not going really hard at that point. And so even, you know, if it's, yeah, doing even sort of more, it can still be maybe a more of a dynamic yoga, but you're not having that high impact. That's really, which I've definitely learned through applying this myself, is it's just much more supportive. It feels right to do that. And then, you know, actually it supports your metabolism, and it's not really the time where you want to be thinking about, you know, increasing your muscle mass, for instance, or getting your PB. And I think a big part of it is the permission to slow down, and that can feel really good as well. So, yeah.
Thank you. That's so helpful. And I think it's bizarre that, you know, as medics, we don't really learn anything about nutrition, but particularly in everything that we learn, like there's nothing that is we learn about the phases of the menstrual cycle, of course, but nothing about actually how that impacts women's health and, yeah, just different things that we can do to support ourselves during different phases. I think it's a bit strange. We kind of feel like, with medical training and just like, you know, the way that we work, we sort of totally ignore the fact that women have these cycles. Yes. So thank you. I think that's really helpful and really, really important for us to kind of think about what are the different things that we can do to support ourselves at different stages of our cycle. The other thing that I wanted to speak to you about was in your work around supporting women with their fertility. Mm-hmm. And again, I think this is a topic that isn't really spoken about, but when I was having a look at the data, particularly women who are medics, because medical school lasts quite a long time and then our medical training is quite intense for a few years, generally we do tend to kind of start trying to have children a bit later on compared to the non-medical population. And looking at the data, there are lots of women in medicine who do have, you know, struggle with conceiving and things with their fertility. And that isn't something that we've spoken about on the podcast before. And that's why I thought this was a really important conversation to have, actually. So love to hear from you what kind of things people can do to help support them with their fertility.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you've said some really good points there. I think in terms of, you know, like I was saying before, that nutrition and lifestyle, it doesn't necessarily have this direct impact on fertility, right? But when it's applied in a really positive way, it can have this amazing indirect impact. And, you know, the research is showing that it can, you know, when you can, especially in a 3-month period in the preconception phase, if you can allow that time, depending on where you are, to really focus on you know, the good quality nutrition, it can, you know, that's the obviously the 90 to 100 days is when, you know, the eggs can sort of, the, you know, so you can work on the egg quality. And so there is, you know, there is research showing that it can improve the egg quality and improve chances of the IVF conception. I think one research showed that up to 40%, and can, you know, also help with, obviously, with women with PCOS and endometriosis and things, to reduce the symptoms that they're experiencing as well. And so, you know, with all this, and with obviously sperm quality too. But yes, in terms of actually just applying nutrition to support the fertility. So if we sort of break down into the macronutrients, so protein is really important and is shown to really support the ovarian reserve. So in terms of protein, then we're looking at, you know, sort of obviously your leaner meats, so things like chicken and turkey, obviously your oily fish, but the advice is to keep to 2, max 3 portions of oily fish per week due to the high mercury intake. And also there's evidence support that the having plant-based protein and a variety of it, so more of the lentils and the chickpeas, you know, sort of quinoa, things like that, and beans. Actually, for women to have the variety of plant-based proteins, and, you know, if they do eat animal proteins too, is to have the mix, and that's really supportive for fertility as well. And in terms of for endometriosis, to try and to keep red meat to a minimum, as the research shows, it has a negative impact otherwise if you eat a lot of red meat due to the high inflammation in the body. So, and then in terms of actually carbohydrates, so complex carbohydrates have been shown to be supportive and protective of fertility. So, you know, obviously that the sweet potato, the brown rice, quinoa, lentil, you know, so all those lovely carbohydrates, and then, you know, the sort of berries and fruits as well. And the women with sort of PCOS, endometriosis, fibroids, things, conditions like that, then actually it says that the in terms of carbohydrate intake, to moderate it. So it's still saying, like, have it in your diet. It's still really beneficial to have the complex carbohydrate, but just to be aware of the portion sizes, and perhaps not able to be as free as maybe someone else who doesn't have that, you know, condition. So, and then in terms of fats, it's really the balance of fats, and trying to really be adding in the omega-3s, so the oily fish, so that's the salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring and trout, and it's, like I said, twice a week. Or in terms of the plant-based omega-3s, we've got the chia seeds, flax seeds, and you can have a little bit in hemp and things like walnuts too. So, and flaxseed oil is a really powerful one too, and you drizzle that on sort of salads and things. So it's not to say that you can't have saturated fats. Obviously we need that. I think it's at 10% in the diet, with, you know, things like the butter, and if you choose, you know, have red meat occasionally, that's, you know, important. But it's then having your sort of your omega-3s, and then your monounsaturated fats, so the avocados, olives, olive oil, nuts and seeds. And yeah, so the fats obviously are really important, because we need them to produce hormones as well, but also we can get, you know, the vitamin E and things from them too. And So really, in terms of that, the macronutrients, it's that sort of the balance plates, ensuring your protein's there, you've got your complex carbs, balancing your fats, and then obviously your vegetables and fruits, that the rainbow colours, so you're getting the antioxidants in there. And then in terms of micronutrients, really we're sort of looking at things like folate is obviously the obvious one. We have that in the prenatal supplements, and we need 400 micrograms per day. And in terms of food, that would be your dark green leafy vegetables. You can even find them in peanuts. And, you know, so there's folate to be focusing on, as well as some zinc, which is really important for hormones too. So in terms of foods, this would be in sort of your pumpkin seeds, seafood, and things like that. So omega-3, as we've touched on, is really important. And then choline as well is not necessarily like really important for the conception phase, but, you know, is when you get pregnant, it's then really important for the fetal development and sort of the pregnancy and maintenance too. So, and then in terms of B vitamins, vitamin B12 is obviously a very important one. So we're getting that through the meats or the animal products, really. So meats, fish, dairy, eggs, things like that. So obviously if you're vegan, then you need to be definitely having a really good multivitamin to be covering the micronutrients that you might not be getting through as much through your foods anyway. So that's really important too. But I would say those are the main ones. Vitamin D as well, ensuring 10 micrograms a day, 400 micrograms, I think. I think I said the unit wrong there, sorry. But yeah, vitamin D is really important, and just ensuring if it's in your multivitamin, and also you're just getting that, if it's in the summer, you know, that half an hour out in the sun as well, because that's obviously the main way we can get our vitamin D. So yeah, I think those are the main things for nutritionally to support your fertility.
And are there specific, as well as kind of looking at those nutrients, are there like specific things that we can do to try and help improve egg quality?
So I think in terms of, I would say the basis would be to have testing. I would say in terms of your have blood work and to see where your vitamins are at, and if you are deficient in, you know, any of the ones I've said. Actually, I missed out iodine, which is a really important one. And there has been research to show that iodine deficiency can be related to miscarriages. So that's, you know, quite an important one too. So I think is if you can test as well to see where you are deficient, and obviously then you can focus more on including those in your diet, and also you may want to then, that's where you may want to include the supplement to support you further. But in terms of egg quality, it's really those main things are going to be really supportive, and ensuring it's really the micronutrients and the balance, and really, you know, an overall picture is a Mediterranean style diet, you know, so where you're getting the fish and the vegetables and the, you know, olive oil and the avocado and your complex vegetables too. So it's trying to keep that in mind. And another one is hydration, is, you know, actually, if we think about the environment that the egg is in, is if we're dehydrated, you know, that actually will show in the environment that it will be kind of a shriveled, dehydrated environment. So even just ensuring you're drinking enough water and having those sort of key points to keep up on, you know, throughout the day is sometimes the simple things, but that really helps. And I know we haven't, you know, touched on the lifestyle things, but, you know, even just really managing your stress levels, and particularly thinking about, you know, medics of course, and, you know, how can you find that 10 minutes a day where you're sort of in your parasympathetic nervous system and your rest and digest, where you can do your deep breathing and, you know, or the yoga, and so that you're, you know, supporting yourself to be in the best preconception sort of stage. So yeah, and sleep is huge as well. And I'm not, obviously, I don't know how much you can control around night shifts and things like that, but again, it's focusing on what you can control. So if you know that it's a particularly tough, harder week in terms of work, then it's where can you pull back and where can you really focus on nutrition and taking your taking your packed lunches in, making sure that it's really high quality and things like that.
Thank you, that's really helpful, and thank you for the nudges on sleep and hydration, because particularly hydration I think is one that I've getting a bit better at, but not great at staying hydrated during work. And actually I've never thought about that affecting egg quality, so there we go. That's really helpful that we can all start. I'm going to start making sure that all my colleagues are staying more hydrated. But thank you so much, Jess. It's been so lovely having you on the podcast, and thank you for giving us a really helpful whistle stop tour of how we could support ourselves during our cycles and things that we can do to help support our fertility as well. Thank you.
Of course, no, thank you. And thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to the Medical Women podcast. Make sure to subscribe for free on whichever podcast platform you listen on so that you automatically get our episodes. The aim of this podcast is to support and empower as many medical women in their careers as we possibly can. So please share this episode with at least one other medical woman. If you're interested in joining the Medical Women's Federation, we would love to have you. And all links to our website and social media are in the show notes. This podcast has been produced on behalf of the Medical Women's Federation by Dr. Nuthana Bayankaram and Miss Jenna McKenzie. Our music was composed and played by Dr. Kethaki Bayankaram. Thank you so much for listening.